welcome to a magical Hug Nation gathering. So wonderful to have you here this afternoon. So wonderful to have you here this now, whenever this is received and released into your presence. So, as now I've been working with some more clients, these incredible experiences come through. And I asked and said, is it okay if I share this in Hug Nation? Because it was so cool. We were talking, and she was talking, one of the things that I asked her to do was keep track of the awesome things that happened during the week. Because I'm a big believer, and a big part of what I try to coach people with is how to tell your story, and how to, as Jacob Glass would say, be a better editor. You've got tons of footage. So when you tell the story, what are the scenes that you are going to make as part of your story, and what are you going to leave on the cutting room floor? There's no, you know, judge that demands you give equal share to the crap and the crone. You have to pay attention. So it's really part of the discipline of finding what the footage that you want to use in your edit that makes your story awesome. And so that's what I use my coaching for a lot, is to recalibrate and tell my story in a way that makes me happy. So one of the things she talked about was she works with kids and that sometimes have developmental disabilities and things. And there's one kid who is really challenged and very angry and struggled. And it was hard to be around. And after working with him for, I think she said a year and a half or something, their family got a new puppy. And the boy, after their session together, went outside and wanted to show her this new dog that they got. And he picked it up and was like, you know, squeezing it, hopefully not too hard, and was just almost crying with joy. And she'd never seen him like this before. She'd never seen this side of this angry little boy. And what a gift it is to see this high point in his normally fluctuatingly low cycles. And so we started using this as another tool. Another piece in the toolbox is learning to see people with their puppy. And how important that can be. And how important it can be when you realize that so the people that you probably love to hang out with are the ones that can see you with your puppy. And when you're in the dumps, they know that, oh, they know that you're going to, that you have that side to you. And so when you start to practice that, in all of your relationships, you get to see people at their best. And then you become this pull towards their best. And you become this believer. And you get to, it's like using the power of manifestation for others as you see them in there with their puppy. And that general idea of trying to practice seeing people at their best has tremendous effects on how you interact with the world and how people see you. I think people really like to hang out with people that visualize them as their best, succeeding, being happy, being joyful. We have a tendency to meet people's expectations. If you've ever been in a relationship where your partner constantly was worried that you were going to cheat on them and thought, you know, that you were going to cheat on them, and you're constantly saying, no, I'm not. I would guess that at some point, eventually, you either cheated on them or you certainly considered it. And that happens in all places. In the workplace, you know, if a boss is convinced that you're going to steal from them, you start to go, you take on the expectations of you. And that's true in a positive way as well. And so, you know, whether it's a school child and you expect them to do well, whether it's someone that is working for you and you expect them to be responsible, are there consequences will people sometimes let you down? Yes, but far less than you would think. And especially if you see them with their puppy. Because everybody wants to be their best. And if other people will believe that they are, they will step into the role. And then if that gets rewarded, it becomes this self-generating, snowballing growth. That's why when Hugnation, when we try to visualize the light in everyone, even if they don't see it, even if it can't get through their crust, we try to see them with their puppy. So that maybe it will start to grow. Maybe they will step into it. And something happens, especially in romantic relationships, where if you're not conscious about how you are seeing the other person and you let yourself collect evidence of things that are going wrong, you're heading towards a bad place. If you instead practice noticing the things that are going good, you will find that you are thrilled with this experience and this person and where that you're headed. That has been, extremely relevant, I mean, and noticeable in my relationship with friends, with jobs, and in romantic relationships. You know, that if I start the story in my head that we're not compatible, or they're not appreciating me, or whatever, then I start to collect evidence, and I see them during their tantrum. And when I call them into my imagination and bring them into in guessing how they're going to react to something, I see them getting angry, and then I expect that, and then I act towards them as if we've already gotten to that place, and then I'm afraid, and then I live in this place of uncomfortableness, even when they haven't done anything, because I've already crafted this negative experience. But on the other hand, if I try to focus on all the good stuff, somehow it tends to unroll that way. It can be tempting when something bad does happen. You have an argument, for example, and you get heated, and people say things that in the heat of the moment are pretty cruel. It's very tempting to take that low moment on the graph and put a pin in the graph and remember that. And sometimes make sure to remind them of that and bring them back to that. And you're certainly not going to remember, because you know, you're not going to forget it. And I think it's so critical to instead put the pin marks in when they're with their puppy, when they're feeling great, when they're loving you deeply, when they're showing any sort of, and then just making that be the story. It becomes what is the line, you know, let he who without sin cast the first stone, and let he who has never said something that they didn't mean anchor the other person to their low moment. I have definitely felt, or expressed or slammed doors, done things in my lowest moments that, thank God I don't have to be identified and make that be what is expected of me. How horrible would that be if my partner saw me once slam a door and then they remind me all the time that I'm this violent, out of control person. And so if we can practice that with the other, and so when they do something that feels like, oh my gosh, like try to remember, oh, I too have been in that place where I'm acting from this horrible, maybe even wanting to hurt the other person, say something that would, you know, not, I don't intellectually want to hurt them, but it comes from this place of, And so knowing that they're going to have that place too. So let's not put a pin in the graph. Let's put a pin. Let's, you know, have a little forgiveness and compassion and allow ourselves our dips and then focus on the peaks. So I really like that idea of that little, that reminder of the self, like see them with their puppy. You know what? I can tell they're frustrated right now. I can tell that they're going through a lot. So I'm going to just listen, nod, and see them with their puppy. So, I don't think there's anything else I want to say on that. I guess not. So I guess it's a reminder that we are always in this fluctuating, and the practice of forgiving ourselves and others for the dips and accentuating ourselves and others in the peaks is what starts to raise the whole graph, raise the whole graph, raise the whole graph. And what baseline used to be is here. Whereas if we start to focus on the negative things, we drop the baseline down. It's this grand process of raising, 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 still having fluctuating, but raising the baseline. Ah, so right now I'm imagining all of you, you're your puppies. Let's have a puppy hug. So wherever you are, grab yourself by the shoulders. And we recognize that we have our ups and we have our downs. And so does everybody else. And we are as strong as we can be. We can also be so malleable and shaped by those around us. And so sometimes the most grandest gift we can give to someone is simply to expect them to be amazing, to be forgiving, to be loving, to be responsible, to set a place for them at the table of their divinity. And so let's sit down at our table place. Let's allow our puppy to nip at our heel. And know that even if there's just slight moments when we're at our best, that is our potential. That is where we can be. Then not beat ourselves up when we're not there. Simply remind ourselves that when we're down, when we're frustrated, when we're acting not in that place, and when other people are, we're on our way back to our highest self. And when we can practice seeing others, and we can remind ourselves, then we come back so much faster, we stay there so much longer, and then our highest place starts to rise. And we get more and more in touch and more in alignment with our divine selves. And when we are super aligned, then we're all just one. So let's just take three breaths together as that one, as our highest selves, as puppies lick our faces. And we embrace and are all part of the one. Let's take three breaths in through the nose. On behalf of Grandpa Caleb, all the puppies, and all the love warriors, happy Hug Nation. Thank you for walking the path and stepping into your highest self and allowing others to step into it as well. Thank you. I love you. Namaste. And I want everyone to repeat after me. I lead a charmed life. Actually, let's take a step back and say, someone once or recently just asked me, they said, did you ever see yourself doing this kind of work? And I was like, you know what? Actually, when I was in college, I was a psychology major, and my dream was to do Maslow self-actualization type counseling. I really wanted to work with people who are basically healthy and help them to really embrace the happiness and joy in their lives more. And so I graduated in psychology, did my little honors route, really en route to go to grad school so I could be a counselor, worked at a group home for emotionally disturbed boys. And as I met more and more people in the field, I realized, or I discovered, that most of the jobs that I saw that were out there were not dealing with healthy people who want to get better. If you're a hotshot and you have a private practice and you can, you know, there are people that were doing it, but the people that I was meeting were more getting jobs that were paid with insurance, and insurance, you need to have, you know, some sort of trauma or something bad. And I'm like, I really don't want to work with people who are suffering terribly. I want to work with people who are at a nice baseline and want to get even better. And so I realized, oh, okay, maybe this is not the right path for me. I hated working at the group home. It was very draining. I had not yet figured out how to spread light amidst a bunch of darkness. It was too draining for me. And so quit, went and worked for a call center, practiced, you know, learned how to do my zine better, and then discovered the internet while I was there, and that changed my life. So 15 years later, there is now this field of life coaching, which is basically about people who are balanced but want to get better. It's not specifically, you know, Maslowian or, now I'm blanking on the name of that school of thought, but luckily there's no test on this. So it's been thrilling as because I'm kind of doing this out of desire as opposed to necessity, I'm able to work with people that are just awesome. And, you know, I see a life coach now, and it's incredibly rewarding and valuable. And so the things that I have appreciated through my experience with coaching is what makes is kind of helped me define what I want to offer as a coach. And so I try to be clear about what I do and don't do. One of the things that I urge everyone to do is to dedicate something, some resources towards your pursuit of joy. You know, often we think that, you know, I don't have enough money to, you know, buy a book that is going to make me happier or go to a seminar or have a coach. And, you know, I don't know, about 10 years ago, I realized that I need to have a joy budget. I need to dedicate a certain amount of resources to being happy. If I have a, you know, an entertainment budget, if I'm going to spend, you know, $200 a month on drinks and sex toys, you know, I need to have, actually, those are separate budget items. The column for sex toys and the column for entertainment. Movies, we'll say. Okay. Anyway, that I should dedicate some resources to my joy. So I happily pay for, I subscribe to Jacob Glass's lectures every week, and I have a coach that I see twice a month, and, you know, certain books. It's something that I feel is important. And I think that that's part of what has really facilitated my growth is by my voting with my intention and with my dollar and with my resources. This is important to me. And so the universe responds. Thank you. I love you. Namaste.